Well, welcome to our, what is this, fourth session of Bible study, I think? Fifth session. We are still in the midst of chapter two, which is the sign of the covenant. And we'll open with our prayer as we normally do. Grace, I'm going to give you a copy of our general weekly agenda too, so you have it. Let us pray. Almighty God, you have placed in the skies the sign of your covenant with all living things. Grant that we who are saved through water and the Spirit may worthily offer to you our sacrifice of thanksgiving through Jesus Christ our Lord. Amen.
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 So we stopped last week, not where we thought we were going to stop. We got talking about other things. And we stopped with Noah and the Ark. So that's at the bottom of page 20. That is chapter 6, verse 5, just if you're keeping track. Some people like to write down that we're at chapter 6, verse 5. I'm going to remind you where the gaps are in the story today. After that first paragraph, we eliminate verses 9 through 12.
Okay, hold on.
Oh, so you don't, but you don't have the 9 through 12.
No, so 9 through 12 is missing between these two paragraphs.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
At the end of the next paragraph, that's the end of chapter 6, and we pick up the next paragraph with chapter 7, verse 7. So we skipped 6 verses there, and it will become clear.
Chapter 7, verse?
We skip 7, 1 through 6.
Okay, chapter.
And then right at the bottom of that page, before the word the, we skip verses 11 to 16. And it will become clear why we're skipping these verses.
Yeah, I know there's one place where there's a whole bunch
of... It's a whole bunch of genealogies in those cases,
Mm-hmm.
Then at the end of that paragraph, on the top of 22,
mm-hmm.
we skip verses 23 and 24. Which is a restating of the verses right before it, so it wasn't necessarily important to the story.
Mm-hmm.
Although there is a biblical... I mean, there's a reason, a literary reason why they would have repeated it, but it's not important.
Because they contradicted one another?
Or it might have been emphasis. I'm not even sure what it is in this case, but I know it was a repeat. And then we skip a little bit in the middle of this paragraph as well. So see where this line is?
Mm-hmm.
I know that you can't probably see it very well on the screen, but
mm-hmm.
It's before the word at the end of 40 days. We skip from verse 3, the first half of verse 3 is there, and we skip through, and that next verse is verse 6, at the end of 40 days.
So skip 3 to 5.
Well, we've got the first half of 3 there, so we skip the second half of 3 through 5.
Okay.
And then we can, let's see, you don't skip anything there. The next place we skip is right before the Tower of Babel, which is on page 24,
mm-hmm.
and there's quite a bit skipped there. It's all of chapter, or it's the remainder of chapter 9, so 20 to 29 of chapter 9, and all of chapter 10.
Say, repeat that.
9, 20 through 29, and 10.
Say again, chapter?
Chapter 9.
9.
Verses 20 to 29.
20 to 29, thank you.
And chapter 10, all of it. Okay. And what I'll do next time, I already made the copies for today, but maybe next time I'll just write these on so that you can see something
handy.
Was left out.
That would be handy.
That might be helpful.
Because
I do look ahead of time to see what we've left out, just to see if there's anything important. When we talked about Eden, they left out the part about the rivers, which didn't make any influence to the story.
Right.
But when we saw pictures of, when we're going to get to the images part,
mm-hmm.
we saw pictures of Eden, and there was this big river running through it, and we hadn't heard anything about water. So it may make a difference to what we see, but
mm-hmm.
not necessarily to what we're reading. Okay, so how we do this generally is we talk back through the story. So we're going to talk about Noah and the Ark and tell the story in our own words. We're going to stop with the end of the flood. And then if we get to that far, we'll go through it again with after the flood through the Tower of Babel. And then, so I'm kind of breaking it into the bigger sections as they label it. So we're going to talk about the story of Noah and the Ark. And what we're trying to do is just retell the story in our own words. We're not trying to assign any meaning or ask any questions. We just want to tell what happened so that we remind ourselves and get a good firm foundation of the story in our heads. So,
unfortunately, I have questions.
Well, we're going to get to the questions. Don't worry. We've got plenty of time for questions, but if we can take 3 or 4 minutes and just tell the story, then at least everyone, you might have picked up something that Jeanette never even saw when you
sure.
think about what you read. So let's talk about the story, and then we'll get back and we'll engage with the story, which is where we come up with the questions and some of the things that I want to add, some of the JP stuff. We'll talk about some parallels in ancient Near Eastern stories that are not the Bible.
Yeah.
We'll talk about some images, and then we'll move on and kind of keep doing that through the stories. So, Noah and the Ark. How'd the story begin?
God is very angry at all the wickedness.
Right, okay.
Unreasonably, outrageously wicked.
Yes. And then
he's going to do away with all of them.
So he said, I'm going to do, he meaning God. God said, I will blot out from the earth, blah, 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 blah.
Right.
And then what happened?
Well, he asked Noah to build the ark.
Yeah, where'd Noah come from? We don't know in this story, right?
Yeah.
We do, I think, in here. But we don't in the story we have. We don't know where Noah came from, but God found Noah.
Yeah.
And he said to Noah,
build the ark and put...
Because you are a righteous man.
All the animals and birds and want a male and female so that when they get off, they can multiply.
Okay. Do you agree with that statement? I'm asking because there is some discrepancy here.
So what did you say?
Put a pair of each creature?
Of each species?
No, because there are two different places in this... business about Noah, where first it's a pair of everything, and then later it's the difference between clean and unclean. You'll do, I think it was 7 pairs of the clean and maybe just 1 pair of the unclean.
Yes.
And
yeah,
the clean,
so there are two different.
And the clean are the ones who chew cud and have cleft feet, and the unclean are the ones that don't chew cud and don't have cleft feet, and they are the pigs and that type of animals, pigs.
Pork, yeah.
Yeah. Whereas the clean are the cattle, the deer.
Yeah.
That
okay.
They don't have the split hoof.
Yeah, the split yes. hoof, right.
And then they went into the ark, and it started pouring.
Mm-hmm.
And how long did the waters last? Or how long did it rain?
40 days and 40 nights.
Okay. And then?
Well, then.
What happened because of those waters?
There was a flood.
Right.
Covered the mountains and everything.
Okay. So everything that was not in the ark.
Died.
Hi, Tiffany.
Mm-hmm. Oh, good.
We've just begun. We're just retelling the story. So you haven't.
Yeah, we just started the Noah.
Okay.
Glad you could come.
So the waters covered the whole earth.
Mm-hmm.
Anything that wasn't in the ark died.
Yep.
And then, I love this phrase, God remembered. But God remembered Noah and all the wild animals that were with him inside the ark.
Mm-hmm.
And then what happened?
After,
well, when the rain stopped, he sent out a dove.
No, first a raven.
Was it a raven? Was it a raven? I thought it was a dove.
It was both, but the raven was first.
Okay.
He sent the raven out first.
I wanted to point out the wind blew over the earth. And then this happens.
Okay.
Yeah.
The waters receded, and then there were some animals, some kinds of birds sent out to test whether there was, what were they, why were the birds sent out?
The land was dry.
Well, because they wanted to, I remember one brought back a leaf or something, and that's how they knew that the land was drying up.
Right.
That was the dove.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
How
long were they, was it 150 days or something like that, that they were actually on water?
You could figure it out by adding everything up.
Yeah. Okay. We don't need right away.
Right.
Yeah. <It'll> probably.
I might actually reference it in what I'm talking about. I can't quite remember. Okay. And then the waters were dried up. And Noah removed the covering of the ark and saw that it was drying up. And then they waited some more. There's a whole lot of hurry up and wait in this story.
Yeah.
Which seems kind of appropriate. And then God told Noah, leave. Go out of the ark and take everything. And then they went out by families. Two by two, as the children's story says, right?
Yeah.
And then what happens after the flood?
Well, he called Noah to go out and multiply. So I'm assuming that everything started to multiply.
Before that.
Oh, the rainbow. His covenant.
Before that, he built
an altar.
Yeah. So Noah gave a sacrifice to God. Mm-hmm. So now we've got the clean animals being sacrificed, which is why we needed extras of the clean animals. And God said, I'll never again curse the ground, yada, yada, yada.
Yeah.
And then we get Noah and his family. This little interjection of God bless Noah and his sons and be fruitful and multiply, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the covenant, which the symbol of...
The covenant is important.
The covenant, yeah.
Yeah.
The covenant, the symbol of it was...
The rainbow.
Yeah.
And that's...
Now, is this the first covenant mentioned in the Bible? I don't remember.
It is.
Okay.
It's the first covenant that's important to that one source, mm-hmm. which we're going to be talking about.
Yeah, no, but I mean prior to this, some scholars talk about the creation covenant, and other scholars talk about the Adam covenant.
Okay.
You know. But I was asking, was that actually mentioned in the Bible? I don't think so.
I don't really think so. Okay. On that little sheet.
Yeah, this table?
The table. The P source has a thematic series of covenants. Noah, Abraham, and Israel.
Noah, Abraham, and what?
Israel.
Do you have more of those? Because I couldn't make it last week.
Oh, I forgot. Yes.
I did listen. It was a very good discussion.
Yeah, me too. I didn't over here really either. But I listened to the taped version.
Yeah, that's good.
Yeah.
So there may be a covenant, but it's not important in terms of mm-hmm. that source.
Okay.
And having a covenant.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so now... Let me take you through a few things I found, and then we'll start talking about your questions.
Okay.
So we're going to stop with the Tower of Babel, like I said, mm-hmm. for now, and we'll see if we get to it. It's a very short discussion about that, so we might actually be able to finish that today as well. All right, so we've got two sources at play here, and if you flip over that documentary hypothesis sheet.
Say what?
If you flip over this table.
Oh, this table.
On the back of that,
mm-hmm.
we can actually see it at work. So I made this extra big. And you can see we've got, then the Lord said to Noah. So in this place, God is called the Lord. Go into the ark and do this and this. And then all of a sudden in the middle of it, we have male and female. You recall from our previous discussions that male and female was a phrase that one of the writers really, really liked. And that was the priestly source. So that's, it's italicized here. So you can kind of see these interspersing with one another. That first paragraph is mostly the J source, which uses the Lord. And then all of a sudden, the second paragraph, we've got some interplay. And we talked about this, of the clean animals and of the other animals. And there are different amounts of numbers depending on who's talking. So you can kind of see how they go back and forth and mm-hmm. try and weave these two stories together.
Mm-hmm.
We're not going to discuss this at length, but I wanted to point out how mm-hmm. you can kind of see them being melded together into one oral tradition that would have been written down at some point.
Mm-hmm.
So that J version where the Lord is used, the non-italicized, if you will,
mm-hmm.
That person thinks that the flood was initiated for one reason. Because God was mad at human corruption. Mm-hmm. Right? Mm-hmm. That might not be the same reason that the other person thinks the flood was. Right? I'm going to talk about J first, and then we'll get to P.
Okay.
Only Noah found favor in the eyes of God and was instructed to bring in 7 pairs of the clean animals and birds and 2 pairs of the unclean. And then the Lord shut him in as if a person were closing a door.
Where are you reading?
I'm just looking at my own notes.
Oh, okay.
Right.
Okay.
So we're thinking back to the story here.
Mm-hmm.
So one of the things we talked about in the different sources is some of them believe that God acts as a person, right? And so this mm-hmm. actually has God shutting Noah into something mm-hmm. and acting like a person.
Yeah. Where is it in the document? That phrase shut
him
in.
Would be.
I never know that.
Well, I saw it somewhere. I didn't write down where it was. Hold on.
It's not, I don't think it's in this.
It might be a different version of the Bible, yeah, too, to be perfectly honest with you.
Mm-hmm.
I do not see it in here.
Okay. Well, eventually you've got to find it and tell us.
Yeah,
I will look.
I don't remember all the 7 different whatever animals either in this thing with the extra.
Oh, that
is on there.
That's when they're clean and unclean in the Bible when he talks about the clean and unclean.
It said, okay.
Originally,
it said that there's another account, but I don't think it was in the one that we read.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the first time it's mentioned, it's just a pair of everything. And then later in another paragraph, it separates clean and unclean. You'll take 7 pairs of the clean.
I think you're right. I think it's in possibly.
There's like, it's in a
place I think it's
of
in,
interest, but I don't think it was in our version.
I think it might be in that section that's left out right here, 6, 9 to 12.
Mm-hmm. It's in the Bible.
Nope, that's.
Because I know when he started sacrificing, I thought
it's well, 7 1 to it's right, it's left out right here.
Okay.
Because I was wondering, well, if he only had 2 and then he sacrificed 1, how's that gonna work?
Yeah. It caught me because I noticed right away as I was reading it, you know, the difference. You know, first it's just 2 of everything, and then he separates clean and unclean. And of course, immediately you want to know what does that mean. And so I looked it up, you know.
And in the J version, now we talked about this, Noah released 3 doves. He actually does all doves in the J version of it. The first 2 returned to the ark, but when the 3rd didn't, Noah knew that it was safe to disembark. And then he built that altar to Yahweh, God, and sacrificed some of the clean animals and the birds. And then God smelled that sacrifice. God is doing something that's human. He's smelling the sacrifice and promised to never again curse the ground.
Mm-hmm.
In the P version, which should remind you a little bit of creation, and I pointed this out, the flood is initiated because God is upset at human corruption and violence. And Noah is given very explicit instructions on how to build that ark.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It must be
mm-hmm.
300 cubits long, 50 cubits wide, and 30 cubits high. Above with the roof, and put the door and the side, and make it a second lower and third decks, and all mm-hmm. these specific instructions about how to do it.
Mm-hmm.
A door had to be pretty high to get those grass in there.
Unless there were babies, right? And then he was told to bring into it his extended family and 2 of every animal, male and female. And there were the differences because P wasn't interested in sacrificing something. There was no sacrifice until the time of Moses for this P writer, the priestly source. The flood is caused by rain in the first one. But in the priestly source, it results from undoing creation. And this is 7:11, which is not in your thing, but it says, in the 600th year of Noah's life, in the second month, on the 17th day of the month, on that day, all the fountains of the great deep burst forth.
Where are you reading from?
This is NRSV 7:11.
They were at that.
All the fountains of the great deep burst forth. And the windows of the heavens were open. So this should be reminiscent of the waters above and the waters below have now burst forth and uncreated, essentially.
Mm-hmm. Repeat what version of the Bible?
This is NRSV.
Okay, wait a minute.
So I'm just a little bit confused.
NRSV, period? No extension or update?
This is not
okay.
The updated.
NRSV, yeah. Okay.
So when we're seeing that there's all these different versions, and even in what we have,
which you have NRSV in front of you, it's just a verse that isn't in.
Okay, is that why it feels?
It feels slightly disjointed because there are most of what's left out. Excuse me, in this, and I told Jeanette next time that I print one of these. Excuse me, I've got the hiccups. I'll list where the things were left out so that you can follow along. But most of the things that were left out in this story, set of stories, are genealogies. You know, that boring, and so-and-so had 487 years life, and he gave birth to so-and-so who lived 397 years. And
would you give me the what you just read? Genesis what?
7:11.
7:11, okay.
Okay, I guess my question, though, is so the story that is written that's in the Bible, regardless of the version, are we really reading the influence of several voices?
Yes,
we are.
We're reading, if you go back to that chart that's on the other side.
Okay, in this story, I was thinking certain books were certain voices.
In some cases, yes.
Okay.
But we often get them mixed together. So in Genesis, we see an impact from J and P primarily.
Okay.
That's D is generally just in Deuteronomy. And that E source is kind of fragmented throughout, but J and P are primary sources for Genesis.
Okay. That's, I was just confused.
Yep. No, that's fine. And it's hard to explain until you can actually, like, they have Bibles that have it color coded by what they think, kind of like I've done there with regular and italics, but it gets messy.
Well, that's interesting. It's in it here, and I've read this, and I never noticed that.
Yeah.
Where they say the fountains of the great deep burst forth and the windows of the heavens were opened.
Yeah.
I never noticed.
So it's an undoing of creation in this version.
Well, if you want to.
Well, because they talk about the great deep and the heavens being formed.
But not the undoing of creation.
Well, I mean, it's the opposite of setting them apart. They've now come back together in the middle.
Okay.
So that's what I mean by undoing.
Permanently.
No.
Undone.
No.
Okay. Okay.
In the P source, the flood lasted for a full year. And then, as I pointed out, God made a wind blow over the earth and renewed the separation. That's Genesis 8:1, which is in here. But God remembered Noah and all the wild animals. And God made a wind blow over the earth, and the water subsided. The fountains of the deep and the windows of the heavens were closed, and the rain from the heavens was restrained, and the waters gradually receded.
Yeah, and so 150 days, right?
Well, in this version, it rained for a year.
Yeah.
And it's trying to figure out which one's which that you're getting all confused.
Yeah.
It's hard.
At the end of 150 days, the waters had abated.
Right.
And then goes on to talk about the seventh month, because that would have been 5 months.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And in this version, Noah releases a raven. This is why we're getting confused about the birds.
Mm-hmm.
And when it didn't return, he left the ark with all the family and all the animals. And God blessed Noah and his sons. This is right at the bottom of after the flood. And suggested a second creation. Be fruitful and multiply and fill the earth.
Mm-hmm. Just like he had
just
said,
like the Garden of Eden.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So there's, it's very, it's like a second story of the first, but told in a different way.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Now, can I ask my question?
Can I get to the covenant and then we can talk about questions?
Yep.
So what this does end in that is important is a covenant. God makes a covenant with Noah and says that Noah represents, essentially Noah is the representative of humanity in all creation.
Mm-hmm.
So Noah is standing in for everyone to follow. Poor old Noah. God promises never again to destroy the world by a flood. It's that simple.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And the sign of the covenant is the bow in the clouds. Bow in the clouds. What does the word bow make you think of besides a rainbow?
Yeah, when you're shooting an arrow.
Right.
Bow and arrow.
Right. So we're going to talk about, well, we're going to talk about a parallel. We're not going to get to that in this, but some of the old Near Eastern stories have a storm god shooting arrows from the heavens down to the earth. So that might be reminiscent of that as well.
Well, there are several parts in the Bible where it says God shooting arrows down.
Yeah, yeah. And that is also probably reminiscent of those stories as well. Mm-hmm. Okay, question time.
Okay. Why?
She's been waiting.
They've been waiting so long. Why did this extreme wickedness of humankind, I mean, why and how did humans become so evil? Was God not paying attention to them? I mean, or not?
Good question.
I mean, after Noah, there's always families and clans and tribes, and there's a head of this family, clan, tribe, whatever, that is responsible for keeping people faithful to God.
But God gave people free will.
I know, but I'm saying throughout the whole history of Israel, they're never really as faithful as they're supposed to be. They're always failing, you know.
Well, we're still not. We're
still not. Right.
Oh, wow. You got that right. You know, but back here, I'm thinking that there's no leader and God is not paying attention to them. I mean,
I think that's a good point.
There
was not a leader to be telling them kind of what they should be doing.
They had no roses.
Right.
Right. Yeah. I think that's a really
good point. Can we talk about the story though? I mean, we started in Garden of Eden where Adam and Eve weren't faithful to what God said, and he kicks them out of the Garden of Eden.
Mm-hmm.
And then we've got Cain and Abel where one murders the other.
Mm-hmm.
And then Cain's descendants build a city.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, in 6, it's probably one of the ones that's left out. No, we read, and you pointed this out too, the Lord saw the wickedness of humankind was great in the earth, and the inclination of thoughts of their hearts was only evil. And the Lord was sorry he made humankind.
Mm-hmm.
But what happened up until that point?
Right. Yeah.
No idea.
Mm-hmm.
Does it matter to the story?
Yeah.
Probably not, because what we see is a redemptive God over and over, right?
Mm-hmm.
Who sees that the people weren't listening, sends a way to let them know that they need to listen. They listen, and then repeats ad nauseum, right?
Well, how many times did God, because people are even, they cry out to God, and then he forgives them. How many times in this Bible does that happen?
Yeah.
I would love to see it count. That's a lot.
Yeah, that's a lot, right.
Right, and how many times do we have after the Bible that aren't even documented where people cry out and they're forgiven?
Yeah. But it was just kind of unbelievable to me, you know, when I read this, that, you know, they were so greatly wicked, you know. Well,
notice,
I was just thinking, well, why did God let them get to that point?
That's,
you know,
that's a great
why didn't
question.
He intercede and say something? But, you know, I don't know.
But notice, as we get to the end of the flood story, it didn't solve the problem. God recognizes, and I'm reading from right here after the flood.
Okay.
After the flood, the inclination of the human heart is evil from youth.
Okay, where is that? Yeah. Oh, yeah, I see it. Mm-hmm.
The inclination of the human heart is evil from youth.
Well,
and part of the story okay. You don't get at the end here is Noah builds a vineyard,
mm-hmm.
makes wine out of the grapes, and gets drunk.
Oh,
yeah,
gets drunk. Oh, dear.
And then there's some issues with him and his sons as well, but clearly Noah didn't learn.
So the question is, why is the inclination of the human heart evil from you? Why? I mean, God, you created us in your image. So where does
this inclination... you could read into that God had evil in God. I don't think that's what we should read into it by any means. No. But no. It could be made as a case, right? I mean, if you're reading literally what it says, in God's mm-hmm. image we were created, so that means mm-hmm. that.
Yeah.
I don't know that there's an answer, and but I think it's a great point to raise.
He still gave you free will, and you can do what you want with your course. Body.
Sure.
If you don't believe everything in here, you're in trouble. That's the way I look at it.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it's almost when you read this, it's almost like it's built into. A human, you know.
Okay, and I think that's what it says,
who
right?
Who made me, you know?
One of the other recurring themes, and we talked about this last time, was humans in the soil.
Humans in the what?
Humans and the soil.
Oh.
Adam was made out of the earth.
Mm-hmm.
Eve was taken out of the rib. So humans started in the soil. We talked about last time... I gotta look back at my notes here. What did we talk about last time?
Cain and Abel.
What did we talk about with them last time, though? Didn't we talk about something in them in the soil? You weren't here either.
No, I just listened to it yesterday.
Cain was cursed from the ground and told that the ground would no longer produce for him. And so he was sent out and banished. And the harmonious relationship was broken because of their disobedience in the garden. But we see that kind of at work here, too, in the fact that out of the ground, the Lord has cursed this one. It's Genesis 5:29.
Is it on the sheet?
It is not on the sheet. So let me read it right from the Bible.
Say again, it's
5:29. When Lamech had lived 182 years, he became the father of a son. Here's 29. He named him Noah, saying, out of the ground that the Lord has cursed, this one shall bring us relief from our work and from the toil of our hands. So Noah himself was named as being the savior of the soil, essentially, right? I wouldn't necessarily call it that, but that's how I'm... going to summarize it. And it seemed that maybe a restoration of this whole humans in the soil thing was possible. And after the flood, that agriculture, the vineyard and the drunkenness and the grapes, we learned every human's got evil in their heart. And in 9:20, I think it even says Noah was a man of the soil, meaning that he was a tender of the, a farmer. But what other questions before I get to Gilgamesh?
I don't know that it was a question, but I thought it was really interesting. How as the waters increased, it talked about how the ark floated on the face of the waters and the water swelled mightily. And I don't know, it just reminded me of we talked about the chaos with the creation story and now the, humanity and what's left of creation is kind of caught up in that. And I don't know, And even when the wind was blowing over the earth, then when God remembered That reminded me too, like when in the Exodus story, that's how God starts to part the Red Sea, is through that wind, and how the people were saved.
Yeah. Wind and waters are very important in the Bible, as is wilderness. And sometimes wilderness isn't what we think it is. Wilderness can be the murky waters, right? Wilderness could be that flood on the sea. It's just wild.
Some desolate place.
Right, and it doesn't have to be dry. Well, oftentimes we think wilderness as either like a forest or a desert, but really it could be any place that is desolate and unformed, for lack of a better term. What we called chaos at the beginning of the Genesis creation story. All right, so I think we talked about Gilgamesh before, right?
Did we
talk about Gilgamesh last week?
A little bit.
I think I mentioned it in him and in Enkidu, right? Enkidu?
That was 2 weeks ago.
So just for Grace's benefit, in case she didn't listen, the stories of Gilgamesh was a story from Assyria, probably in the early 600s BCE. They were written and are preserved today. We see the story of Adam and Eve paralleled in it, and also flood stories. So I wanted to read a little bit of the flood story. It's only about this long. So, but before I get to that, both of them include, both Genesis and Gilgamesh, talk about divine anger. God was mad. See that in the flood story.
I can't imagine what he was right
now. A hero who was warned by God of a flood that was going to happen.
Yeah.
So here we have Noah. In this case, we'll see who it is. Detailed instructions for building a boat or some kind of a container to escape the rains. Instructions to take on board family and animals. After the flood, the boat in both cases comes to rest on a mountain. And after the boat rests, three birds are released in both of these stories. See if you can notice the similarities as I read just a few excerpts. For 6 days and seven nights, the winds blew. On the seventh day, the storm subsided and the sea grew quiet. I felt the stillness. All humanity had become clay. I opened the hatch. Sunlight fell on my face. I bowed my face to the deck and wept. The ark ran aground on Mount Nisir. It remained grounded for 6 days. On day seven, I released a dove which flew away but returned. There was no place for it to rest. I released a swallow, which flew away, but it also returned. There was no place for it to rest. I released a raven, which saw that the flood had subsided. It ate. It circled and flew away. Then I released all the creatures, which scattered to the four winds. I prepared an altar there on the mountaintop. I set out my sacred vessels. I kindled a sacred fire of reed, cedar, and myrtle. The divine assembly smelled the aroma. They swarmed like flies around the sacrifice. Really?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Very similar.
Yeah. This is Mesopotamia?
This is Assyria.
Oh, Assyria.
It's from the, it dates to the early Bronze period.
Okay.
Which would have been about 3300 BCE. So well before we've got any of our stories written down. So it would have been an oral tradition.
Mm-hmm.
And we have modified it to fit our God and what our God did. But in this one, it's clearly God's, because it says they circled like flies. I think it's just fascinating that, I mean, you would expect cultures to borrow from one another and to make stories their own. But
so do we think that this really reflects God's true nature then, if it's borrowed from something else?
That's a great question.
Repeat your question.
I just said, do we really think that this story reflects God's true nature if it was borrowed from? I don't know.
I'm going to point that back at everyone else. What do you think? We borrowed the story. Should we have made our own story? Or do we see God reflected in the story, and so we just use it or modify it slightly?
Right, or just people just trying to explain something, but
I don't have answers for this.
I see your book for a minute.
Yeah, it's wild though. I hadn't realized.
I just want to write down the name and authors.
Yeah. So oftentimes we tell Noah as a children's story. This is one of the questions at the end. In fact, we've got a Lego ark, as Jeanette was talking about, elephants on it. But it has some really difficult stuff in it. Yeah. It really does. So now that we've read it again and really focused on it, what parts are difficult? Other than the evil was born in their hearts.
Yeah, I think, you know, as a Sunday school teacher of the youngest kids, I've felt that and wondered, you know, how do I tell it so they're not afraid, so they don't get a bad feeling about God? You know, so I usually just read whatever the children's version is, and nobody really asks. And I know I never asked, you know, but as an adult, when I was, you know, teaching this, that's when I really started to look at the story.
It's why we focus on the rainbow, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because the other part is hard, but God made a covenant. I'm not going to destroy the earth with a flood again. Yeah. That's great news.
Yeah.
Look at the rainbow.
Yeah. It's, you know, it would be very disturbing, I think, for kids to hear the original.
Mm-hmm.
Personally, I think.
Mm-hmm. Well, and there's two stories woven together, which makes it really confusing, as we've seen today. I mean, we've got three birds in one case, one bird in another, which, so now you've got talking about three birds, but then later on we say one bird. We've got seven pairs of animals versus one pair of animals. So you've got to kind of limit what parts of the story you tell if you're trying to teach it to someone who's younger anyway. But I think the good news is what it asks in question three, which is the story balances God's punishment and God's mercy. And it says God punishes Cain, but also protects Cain. God punishes Noah, well, the living creatures of the land, but also saves the living creatures of the land. What does that make you feel about God?
Oh, he's a forgiving God.
Okay. But still judgmental, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's judgment, and then there's, what's the word?
Mercy.
Mercy, mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that's, and that is constantly, that pairing is constantly repeated in our study of Isaiah throughout the whole book, a million times, you know. I mean,
it's not just Isaiah. I mean, it's really the whole Bible.
Oh, yeah, right.
And as I mentioned, it's the people do something stupid.
Mm-hmm.
God punishes them. They admit that they were wrong and God forgives them. Repeat cycle, repeat cycle, repeat cycle, over and over.
Yeah.
What else we got about Noah? I've got some pictures to show.
I'm sorry.
This is music while I'm trying to find a good place.
Good timing, good timing.
Okay. This is from Rüdiger Schopf.
From what? Called
Rüdiger Schopf. From Episodes from the Story of Noah. This is folio 26V, whatever that means.
I'm just looking at the folio.
What do you got going on in here? How are you feeling about this image?
Well, there's a little dove coming into the ark.
Okay, we got a dove up here.
Yeah. What about the bottom?
Yeah, I was going to say, is that the raven?
This is labeled Corvus, which means raven.
Raven, yeah.
And it's pecking at
dead.
A dog, dead something. So what does this remind you of? Not necessarily Noah's story, but what I just read from the Gilgamesh, where it said the raven circled and ate.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
How about that?
The inscription here apparently means the entry of Noah into the ark, but that doesn't seem quite accurate since the dove is already arriving with the olive branch. So, and the raven's out killing things. I think this is the end of ARC. But
I'm sorry, what year did you say?
It doesn't say what year it's from, unfortunately. And I can't quite, I mean, that's clearly Latin, but this certainly does not look Latin to me. That looks like some kind of script to me. What do you notice about the people? Or in some cases, animals?
Well, they're kind of funny looking, but...
They are kind of funny looking.
They're really big.
They are huge compared to those doors.
Yeah, compared to the boat. They are.
What struck me is it looks like they're looking out of a church. And it almost looks like Mary Joseph and the animals at the stable.
Oh, yeah.
A little bit.
I mean, we've got a donkey and a cow.
But no baby.
But no baby. It can't be a coincidence that these are the two animals that are picked. Or the shape of the windows and the...
That's interesting.
All right, the next one I have, and I'll get it bigger here. This is from the Ashburnham Pentateuch in the 6th or 7th century. So the ark is kind of shaped like a chest. More like the Ark of the Covenant than the ark that we would imagine a boat would be.
But it has three stores or floors.
It does have three floors, and it's got a door and windows.
It's got that. It
actually looks really modern, I think.
It looks like the people that didn't make it into the ark are...
Yeah, those are dead bodies floating out there.
Yeah.
Disgusting. Ooh. But not as bad as Cain eating Abel or whoever that was last week. That was pretty.
And it's all in, it looks like it's all enclosed. And that certainly...
But it also has feet.
Oh, well, it looks like a door on the left-hand
door
side.
Door and windows, but it looks like it has feet on it. So it really is more reminiscent of the ark that would have held the tablets in some ways.
Because how would that float?
Okay. But yeah, those are definitely dead bodies floating down there.
Wow.
Yuck.
Yeah, I know. Well, I mean, that's part, you don't visualize.
Great kid story. Yay!
I don't think I'd be using that picture.
All right, this is a panel from the 12th century Noah cycle in the Palatine Chapel in Palermo. What strikes you on this one? I think this might be actually too large. Let's see if it... No? Okay, that is the full size. That something got cut off.
It looks like God standing there while they're coming out of the ark.
It does.
And there's no animals visible in the ark, but that's okay. They're coming out.
They're coming out.
Yeah.
But then what's happening up here?
Oh, gosh. The raven.
There's that raven.
That's a human. That looks like a human body.
Yeah, I think that's a naked corpse that got left over from the flood.
Oh, yeah.
And the ravens decided to eat. Wow. These people like those ravens eating corpses. Mm-hmm. In the middle, Noah's releasing the animals.
Yeah.
We have a sheep and a bull.
What's that other stuff below the ark by your finger?
I'm guessing that might be the mountain.
Oh, okay.
I don't know. Unfortunately, I don't have interpretations on these. But what I do think, Grace, you said this is God. Mm-hmm. And that is the rainbow.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay.
So they've kind of combined the letting out with the covenant with the disgustingness of what happened. All into one picture.
Now, in the lower left and right corners, that looks like beautiful tapestry.
I'm wondering if this is above, like maybe a window or something above the top of the church, because it said it came from Palatine Chapel of Palermo.
Yeah, okay.
Palatine Chapel, I don't know. I'm guessing it's just the mosaic part of the on the wall.
It's not part of the picture. Yeah, okay. Mm-hmm.
So those are just some images that other people have interpreted the story.
Mm-hmm.
How would you interpret the story? What would be important for you to include in a picture? No, I feel like I'm teaching Sunday.
Well, the people survived, that we, that humankind continued on.
Right. So would it be a closed ark? Would it be an open ark?
Oh, heavy clothes to keep all the animals from going
out. No, I guess I'm saying, would you picture the leaving of the ark, or the ark during the storm, or the entering the ark? Or what part of the story would you focus on if you had to draw,
create a picture? The animals coming out of the ark.
Yeah, like this one.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, you know, we always do projects where we do the ark floating is usually a craft, but
yeah.
Well, yeah, I had a smell in there after those all animals. Oh,
especially if you had seven pairs and your pair. If you had seven pairs of every clean animal, that's a lot more than we originally imagined.
Mm-hmm. And I wondered too, you know, I talked about the food. Like, did they have enough food for them?
Well, I do remember that he told Noah to stack that ark. For the people and the animals.
Have you guys been to the national park, the Ark in Kentucky?
I have not.
No, I've heard of it.
Have you?
Oh, yeah, I have.
Was it?
Yeah. Oh, it's beautiful. It's huge.
I've seen pictures of it. I haven't.
Yeah. It's literally.
We can think of, 30 cubits. Yeah. But I don't know what a cubit really means.
Yeah.
I don't either.
But it's a true life-size restructuring, rebuilding of the model of the R.
And it looks more like this than the last one, right? It's not, it looks like a boat.
Yeah, it looks like a boat, yeah. But it's huge. And inside are all sorts of, you know, animals and food storage and, oh my God, it's just.
So how do you feel like that? Is it consistent with, like, how we're reading it, do you feel?
Yeah. Yeah, it's definitely worth going to.
We should take a field trip.
Yes. Bit of a long field trip. Yeah, that's a good idea. I'll go.
So, do you feel like the story is accurate, or do you think it's a metaphor in the Bible here? Do you think this is actually what happened, or do you think it's a metaphor for
telling a story? If God put it in the Bible, I believe it.
Okay. Or do you feel like it's a telling of a story so that we learn why things are wiped out and rebirthed?
Well, it's interesting that it's in so many other, in the stories of other nations.
Yeah, and it's not just, you could look at Native American stories, and there is oftentimes a flood story for Native Americans.
So
as well.
That tends to make me believe that something really happened in the real world.
Right.
You know, I mean, the way it was written, you know, there might be, artistic liberties.
Yeah. Okay.
But I know what you're asking, because as I mentioned when I was here a couple of weeks ago, I said, I don't believe there was a serpent in the Garden of Eden and in a tree, you know. Yeah, it's got to be
a metaphor for something. Or,
right. And I can think of different things that it could have been, right. But we'll not.
And
go there.
Could have been limited by language too, right?
Yeah.
So,
this Bible was written by different Hebrews, the Muslims.
Right, God didn't write the Bible. We're all in clear agreement on that, right?
Interpretations of the religions got mixed up in some things.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But it was inspired.
It was definitely inspired by God. Right. But God did not sit here and scribe the words. And,
right.
But it was certainly human experience of what they thought God was doing in their lives.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
We would be having a different conversation if we were at an evangelical church, perhaps, where they believe that God's words are those words on the paper.
Yeah.
But I think we're all of one kind here, where we at least acknowledge that these are human words that were inspired by something that was working in their lives or something they had experienced or heard about. Or
when I first started doing Bible study, was a friend that actually we were neighbors when we were teenagers, but she and we hooked up again years later. We were both adults, but I was walking one day and she called me over and she said, would you be interested in doing Bible study? And I said, I would love to. She was an evangelist. So, but she gave me a good start.
Yeah. Well, and I think there is, I mean, I think there's value in hearing everyone's opinions because.
Boy, she knew her Bible though.
That's what I was going to say. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Why don't we continue on with the Tower of Babel? This is a short discussion. This is kind of its own separate story, for lack of a better way of saying it. Remind me what happened. I don't like this story personally, but that's another that's another discussion for another day. Again, that little italicized version is where we have some stuff left out, and they summarize it in the italics.
Mm-hmm. So you've got these people trying to build a tower up to God. Okay. They all speak the same language.
They are all speaking the same language.
All speaking the same language.
Important. Okay.
But the tower, I think they're attempting to reach God and do, you know, inhuman things. And
where was the Tower of Babel? Was it in Egypt? Was it in Israel?
It was on a plain in the land of Shinar.
Where's that?
I was hoping you weren't going to ask me. Hold on.
Probably in that Mesopotamia region.
Trying to find my map.
Well, they were building, they wanted to make a name for themselves. They wanted to show how great they were.
That only starts with chapter 12.
S-H-I-N-A-R.
Well, while we're talking about that, what else happens in the story? So they tried to build this tower.
Right, and God sees it and kind of says, well, what else are they going to do after this? Kind of, and he decides to put a stop to it by confusing language.
Right.
So that they can't understand, and then they become scattered. And they stop building the city.
And they stop building.
Mm-hmm. But was it so bad that they were going to be scattered? Like, I didn't really get, like, why that was so...
Okay.
I mean, unless because they were so unified and maybe families were getting scattered. I don't know.
I think it's in Egypt.
This is Shinar.
Where is that?
Right where my finger is.
I know, but what country is it in or near?
It's just above, just slightly northwest of the Persian Gulf.
Okay.
So now we need, I would guess Egypt.
Yeah, okay, that's what I'm coming up with.
But maybe not anymore. I mean, that's...
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, what I came up with is Shinara with an A on the end of it, but yeah. And this is modern times, not...
Now they're saying, the bishop's calling me. Excuse me. I'll be right back.
Hi, Bishop.
Never good when the bishop calls. At least he's willing to say, oh, yeah, you can call me back. All right, so that's our story. What do you interpret from this story? I have some things that I would...
Well, your notes here say it's always part of Pentecost.
Well, no, yes. I don't think we're reading it on Pentecost, but it can be part of Pentecost.
Mm-hmm.
I don't particularly like the story.
Mm-hmm.
I try to shy away from the story because I feel like, well, we'll get to why I don't like the story, but do you have any questions about it?
Interesting that in the beginning it said it was one language and one and the same word, but then later, as their Noah's, they start they start spreading out, then they have different languages and stuff.
Right.
And customs.
So I think one of the reasons that we read this story, or that this story has been kind of been included in oral tradition, is that it attempts to explain why we have different languages. Right. So we've talked about some of the reasons that things are in the Bible are that they try to explain things like why do people hate snakes? Why are the sexes attracted to each other? Why do we need clothes? I think this one kind of explains or tries to explain why we have different languages. So I think it's important in terms of that. And that's called an etiology, E-T-I-O-L-O-G-Y. It's an explanation of a phenomenon. This story says that it's a punishment from God, who is concerned about the ability of humans to do whatever they wish. So now we're back to this free will thing, but God is punishing us for free will.
Yeah, it doesn't.
So it doesn't really fit, right? This story just seems plucked to me and doesn't feel like it's part of the continuous story, which is why I don't like it really. I think that's what it all comes down to.
And I don't think like the way that it makes God sound like he's threatened by humanity, which I don't think is.
Well, what does make sense is that it seems like this story says that God was upset that humans were using their free will to take the prerogative of God. And so God confused this common language that was out there and made all the people ununified, disunified, which also seems counter to the purpose of what God wants to do. So it, again, in that sense, it feels like it doesn't advance the story of the Bible at all to me.
Well, there's another phrase in here that is probably important. The people are saying, come, let us build ourselves a city, blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, we shall be scattered abroad upon the face of the whole earth. And that's what God wants. He said, go out and multiply, populate the earth.
The third theme we started talking about in this chapter was the boundary between the human and the divine, and the divine boundary that the divine inspiration upon this boundary. Mm-hmm. And this story gets to that more than any of the other Bible stories we've had so far. Any attempt to cross that boundary is a violation of the divinely inspired order that God attempts to immediately wipe out. So if you think about the Garden of Eden, the humans ate the fruit, and so they became like gods. And God says, nope, we're not going to have that. Get out of here. Right? And they couldn't have access to that tree anymore. They couldn't become immortal or fully divine. Only 8 people survived the flood. See if you can figure out who they were. Noah.
Oh, his wife.
And his wife.
And his three sons.
And their wives. Right. That's 8 people. So 8 people survived the flood. And then through those 8 people, we repopulated the earth. And God told Noah, be fruitful and multiply and spread out and replenish the earth. It's at the end of Genesis 9.
Yes.
Why can't I find it? 9:1. I'm not seeing.
I remember.
It's 9:7. I can read it out of here. It's sometimes faster to find stuff.
Oh yeah, be fruitful.
Multiply, right, be fruitful. Multiply. Okay.
Yeah, it's right under that little paragraph.
Okay.
As long as you're
thank you.
Yeah.
The problem isn't that the people wanted to build this tall building. The problem is that they wanted to invade heaven by building that tall building, right? So they wanted to get up there with the gods, God, whatever theism we're using right now, and overthrow God. I think it says, and let us make a name for ourselves, otherwise we'll be mm-hmm. scattered, right? Isn't that what you said? Abroad yeah. upon the face of the whole earth?
Mm-hmm.
But the people knew they were acting in disobedience because God had specifically said, fill the earth. And so they were disregarding God's command and they wanted to show the amazing things that they could do. So we've got this conflict again between the people wanting to be gods mm-hmm. and God saying, no, you're people, you're not gods. And I think mm-hmm. that's the point of the story, but it just doesn't, mm-hmm. I don't like how it fits in here. So this is not one of my favorite stories. I get the point of it. I do, but, and I do have some pictures that I thought you might enjoy of it. So this is called The Tower of Babel by Peter Bruegel the Elder from 1563. You can see it's up in the clouds. They must think that the heavens are low. But look at all that. I mean, it's quite the masterpiece.
Yes.
But then mm-hmm. it looks like pieces of it have fallen down, maybe?
It looks kind of begun to fall.
It doesn't look like it isn't finished yet. It looks instead like it was finished and now it's not.
Now it's falling apart. Yeah. Yeah.
The next one is called Building the Tower of Babel. It's in the Bedford Book of Hours in the 1400s. So you can see they've reached heavens up there because there's some kind of divine thing at the top.
Well, it's a totally different looking tower from the first one.
Yeah, and it's much shorter. I mean, look at the size compared to the people.
Mm-hmm.
That other one was
a monster,
a monstrous thing. You can't even see the people except in the foreground.
Yeah.
Whereas this one, you can see them climbing those steps.
Mm-hmm.
And it's maybe 5 stories high. And now here's one that I want you to think about. This is the European Union poster.
In what year?
It doesn't say what year it came from, but it must be relatively recent mm-hmm. as an EU. So 27 nations have joined together to this EU panel and have pledged to work together.
It looks like a recreation of that first one.
I'm trying to figure out what the Scottish stars are supposed to represent.
Was that really intended to be like the Tower of Babel?
Certainly looks like it.
Wow.
And it's reaching the stars. I don't know why there are 11 stars, because there were 27 countries, but maybe there were 11 who started. Maybe that's why, because it's got... No, there's 12 there. There's only 11 on the top, but there's 12 down here.
Maybe that's
it. It's like little Roblox figures.
And that thing on the right-hand side, it looks almost like a telescope or something.
This crane thing? It's a crane. Oh. It's like a modern day crane building. But certainly this is very reminiscent of that first picture.
Especially the position of the people in the foreground like that.
Let me go back to the first one.
I don't like it. I didn't think it was a very good choice of what they produced there.
Yeah. I found this when I was searching Tower of Babel.
That's wild.
Wow. And I thought it was certainly thought provoking.
Yeah, mm-hmm. it is.
Go back to what you said about Adam and Eve and the serpent and when they ate the apple. Repeat what you said.
About them becoming like gods and then getting kicked out of the Garden of Eden?
Yeah, something about their relationship or something about God, right?
I think I said... We were talking about the boundaries between the human and the divine, right? And mm-hmm. so any attempt to cross that boundary, God was going to act swiftly to try and stop. So when Adam and Eve took and ate the fruit,
mm-hmm.
they were punished by getting banished from the garden.
Mm-hmm.
And they didn't have access to the tree to become immortal and divine.
Yeah, but that's a different tree, becoming immortal.
Correct. That but that was in the garden as well.
True. But I was just thinking that just now knowing, having eaten the apple off of the tree of knowledge, whatever.
I know what you mean.
It was the tree of knowledge.
Yeah.
Knowledge is so good, now evil, they know the difference between good and evil. That's not making them very much like God. I mean, that's
but they were they
a drop in the bucket.
True, but they crossed the instructions from God, right? So
yeah. But there's so much more to God and such an immense, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, for one thing, he is a intangible being.
Mm-hmm.
And humans are not, they are tangible.
I don't like that one. I'm going to get rid of it. Back to the okay.
Okay.
I was going to just talk about this last question, and then I think we can wrap up. So the question for the journey says, in this story, God's anger at humanity, and this story must mean all of them as a collective, God's anger at humanity has implications for the animals and for all creation. The animals die alongside the wicked people. But God's covenant is also with every living creature. What does that tell us about our relationship between God, humanity, and creation? So all these animals perished in the flood.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't do anything wrong.
It almost seems
all these animals are getting killed today because of climate change. They didn't do anything wrong.
Right. That we're supposed to be the stewards of creation.
Right. We're supposed to be.
Yeah. And if we're not doing what we're supposed to be doing, we're like tainting them, maybe. Kind of. They're tainted through human negligence or, you know, lack of care.
So is that saying that they are evil because of what we're doing?
Mm-mm.
I'm just trying to understand.
I don't know. The way that this is written, it almost seems like that it might be presented that way. That's what I think. In the
military, when people go to war and as a side effect, civilians get killed. What is that called?
Collateral damage.
Yeah, that's what the animals are. They just happen to be there. Collateral damage.
So does that say that God values us more than the animals?
Mm-mm.
Well, I don't think so, because he saved some of them so they could multiply.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
He values everything he created.
Mm-hmm.
So how is God allowing, and I'm not taking a side here, please don't take that my questions as, I'm trying to advance the conversation. How is the fact that we're wiping out creatures, whether it's our fault or just climate change that isn't human caused, how is God valuing the creatures in that? Or are we prioritized as creatures? Or is it free will and that's just the end of it?
Repeat your question.
So throughout climate change, whether it's human caused or a cycle or whatever, I mean, mm-hmm. we don't need to debate the science behind it.
Sure.
But definitely there is an increase in extinction and vulnerability of animals and so forth. Mm-hmm. I said, does that mean that God doesn't value those creatures as much? You said collateral damage, and I said, mm-hmm. well, that's fine, but there's still then an aspect of, if God values all of creation, there would be a way to save those creatures as well.
Well, there's definitely people trying to save them.
Right.
Yeah.
So
do we chalk it up as human free will causing the problem and God not being able to do anything about it because of the human free will? In some cases.
Well, thank God there are people that are doing things to keep certain species going.
Mm-hmm.
I know my son that I just came back from, he's got 22 acres in Tennessee. He just put he's now a beekeeper.
Oh, nice.
And he planted a tree in Tennessee. I don't remember which one, but it's becoming so extinct that he's planting them on his property. So there are people that are doing things to make that go the other way.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which, like I said, I'm not here to judge, and I don't want to get us into the scientific debate about it, but I just was curious what your thoughts are on that.
I mean, the way humankind forever has exploited our planet Earth.
Oh, for sure.
For money. I mean, we have almost destroyed this world of ours, you know, our own home, you know. How dumb are we, right? But, and that's, you know, inexcusable. But, I mean, we just rip and tear out the earth for whatever.
But you're never going to stop the greed, and it's all greed.
Yes.
Well, there's that evil born into human hearts.
Yep. Yep.
Mm-hmm. Which manifests itself in different ways.
Yeah.
So we started our exploration of the Bible with creation, if you remember. That's what the little icon was.
Mm-hmm.
And this week's, for this chapter, story of Noah and the other things that happened. We have the image of the rainbow.
And the doves.
I feel like I should be coloring these in or something after we're done with them. Mm-hmm. And some kind of birds, probably doves, maybe ravens, who knows.
Yes.
There's no, they're not pecking at anything.
The good guys.
They're good doves. reminding us of God's promise to Noah and all of creation that God will never cause a flood to come upon the earth again. And every time we see a rainbow, we're reminded of God's faithfulness and Noah's faithfulness.
Mm-hmm.
But we don't end here. Which means that I have a handout for you.
Good.
Once I figure out where it is.
The next lesson.
The next
correct?
One, yes.
Yep.
Where are they?
We knew it was coming.
I know I put it in here. I just got to find them. Ah, they're here. So next week, we will continue the story as we hear about two very special people who listened carefully to God.
Sorry.
And their names were? Just guess.
Abraham.
And, yes, Abraham and Sarah.
Mm-hmm. Good.
And next, after this time, I will start writing the.
Okay, good.
I can't
your
remember.
And about what's omitted.
There is a lot omitted again. You can see it from the scriptural citation at the end. I would suspect it's probably a lot of genealogies. I'm going to stop recording.